Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back, and it is now or never, and I'd like to consider myself a perpetual optimist. I always want to think that there's hope here, there's hope there, that we can do this, we can do that. Now, I have to tell you, pragmatically, I mean, I'm a pragmatic person as well, and pragmatically, having reached out to so many people, and I guess the higher you go, the less likely somebody from way below you can really disturb you or really, you know, get your attention. And I'll just say this because I've reached out. I mean, people have come to me and said, why don't you talk to so-and-so? Why don't you get this person involved? Why don't you get that person involved? And if you read my first book, I actually did. I've reached out to many of these people. I've tried reaching out to almost all of them. And I got to a point where I said, you know, after trying so many times, I go, you know what? I don't see how we can get them through the eye of the needle. I just don't see how they, with their sphere and their influence and how everybody is hanging on the next words that come out of their mouth, like their whole life depends on it. They've reached that level of importance, how they would consider something that might actually tell them that they're wrong or might actually do something that would dismantle what they have. So, closing, because yesterday in closing the show and closing on this topic, I'm not opposed to necessarily debating, but I don't think, and I know everybody likes a good brawl. I myself like a good competition. I like, you know, the outcome of a good sporting event. It's a good sport, right? And debating, it's a great sport as well. But when you actually get into it as a contest between a person and another person, then you're really not necessarily going to get the results that you want. It's about where the information comes from. You have to actually say, okay, what's empirical information? What is not empirical? What is the standard? Because this, I'll tell you right now, the standards today, folks, when it comes to the Constitution, when it comes to the law and everything else, the empirical information is not the mainstream. But the mainstream today is perceived as the empirical information. That's why I said the annotated Constitution. More and more people cling and bask in the light of this living Constitution concept. Because many people have, you know, embraced, because I can easily look at with these filters, you know, if you look for this particular thing, you might find in many of what you would consider really good constitutional conservative that's, you know, out there teaching the Constitution, you can actually find, they've applied a monarchical filter. They're looking at something that is legitimate. See, here's some of the problems. When we created this new Constitution, we actually created a completely different form of government, which then required Black's laws, right? Or Blackstone? So William Blackstone and his laws. Actually, that book should have been rewritten. All of these guides should have been thrown out the side and said, okay, that's appropriate for England and their form of government. But in America, it's different. And so we understand inalienable rights, but most people really don't understand inalienable rights in America, even though we understand them for the most part. here's a question. Is owning property, the right to obtain property, the right to sell, exchange, and transmit property, is that an inalienable right? Can you tax an inalienable right? So actually, we've kind of lost sight then a little bit, because let me ask you this. Can you tax property? Is it an inalienable right to have property? What kind of property is an inalienable right? We understand property, and property rights have really changed and morphed. And so it gets to a point where actually that type of property or this type of property is not an inalienable right. You don't necessarily have a right to own that property anymore. And this is where we can actually see that we have completely drifted, because today there are many people that say no person needs that much property. But can you tax property? Actually, yeah, you can. But is it a good thing to tax property? So, fact of the matter is that when we actually started going down the path of taxing property, the intent was to never take that property. But over time, people realized, well, if you're taxing me and you can't take it from me, then what's the point? So they had to learn to be, or they had to get to a space and into an area where, okay, now we can confiscate and take your property. Hold on here. Is property an inalienable right? Yes. See, folks, this is how we've gone down this path of, and I'm just using inalienable rights and understanding how we have created a, you know, this overarching problem. We, as in America, because we have allowed government to stray away from its enumerated powers. The question is never, why does government need to tax? It is, what is it that they're spending money on? Because that's why they need to tax. Government needs to tax. They need to have some way of making money. And if their primary way of making money is off of the land itself, property tax, then you've got a really bad government. But that's only an ancillary way of taxing. They say, well, we're spending so much money, we need more. That's what happens when you allow government to get completely involved in every facet of your life, to where they can provide those services and make sure everybody gets free services if they can't pay for themselves. That in lies the whole constitutional statism, and this really starts creating this mess we call property. If you really look at the Communist Manifesto, if you look at the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, primarily property, economics, you know, your right to be able to make money, the principles of labor, those types of things are really fundamental in a society. And Karl Marx was pretty good at identifying what were those things that they could, if they collectivize, could control the state. In other words, he basically expounded on what Plato delineated in the Republic. Plato actually goes into a lot more detail. So this is why when you really want to immerse yourself in statism, you really need to read some of these other, I'll just call them altruistic books, or these, you know, these concepts of how, you know, a perfect society could be formed by people and not by God. Because to create that type of society, you really have to become godless. Plato points that out. And Marx literally points that out. A lot of these people that play with it, you have to have something that substitutes God. And the state is that. So, As we get ready, I'm going to go into the commitment with Billy Graham today. And one of the things that we're also going to get into is the Communist Manifesto. I just wanted to kind of get back into the debate of how we could easily debate. I don't think, you know, if if there's merit in actually creating a winner-loser type of scenario, then that would be great. But I would rather see a scenario where everybody wins, where everybody starts looking at and actually starts understanding the importance of what is really the important language from the framers and what really isn't important language from the framers. And so when we actually break it all down and we look at, you know, what is in the official capacity, that's what's important. I had this conversation with John Arvile, and, you know, you can't frame it any better than that. I mean, you could easily come up with a plethora of personal writings, opinions, all sorts of things, but they have no bearing on the topic at hand. They have no bearing on what is constitutional. They have no bearing on the government. They're just opinions. This is like giving the jurist opinions, you know, this holy value that it's greater than anything else. And it's not. Those men put their pants on one leg at a time. It's the same thing with the ladies. It doesn't matter really your gender. It doesn't matter the color of your robe. It really doesn't. What matters is it in the official capacity? So in the court and in a court of law, the official capacity is the ruling on the case. And actually, you have to go before you can get to the ruling on the case. The official capacity of the court is based upon jurisdiction and standing. And if they don't have jurisdiction, because 9 times out of 10, standing is the principle being held actually against the person coming to court. So the question is, should we hear this? And actually, you know, do you have or have you been harmed? How have you been harmed? How does this directly affect you? And so when we go down the path of trying to delineate, you know, because everything is done with the best intentions, right? So when we go down the path of looking at what a judge does and how do we delineate what is really the focus of what that case is all about, it's about the ruling. Yes, you can't, the state of Maryland cannot tax the federal government. That is the final ruling. And that's it. Opinions really don't matter. And they have no weight. They have no place in our government. They can't create law. They're just that, opinions. And even though they may be opinions of highly educated people, whatever they say in their opinion has really no merit. It hasn't. Other than the fact that makes them feel good that they said that. And why is it that we have, you know, a dissenting opinion? Oh, because we think contrarily, and we think that our thoughts are better. Folks, it's when we look at cases, just like the Reynolds v. Sims, Baker v. Carr cases that I've been mentioning, because they're critical right now. The fact is that case should never have seen the light of day in a federal court. Should never have been seen. Never. And as a matter of fact, the ruling itself should have determined whether or not a congressional district or what have you, if it was on a congressional district, but it wasn't. If I remember correctly, these were state legislative seats of how they were apportioning the state legislature. And this is how they stepped in and backhanded the states in saying, you have no ability to determine how you're going to govern yourself. You are not sovereign. We are the sovereigns. Where in the Constitution do they have any jurisdiction over apportionment of how a state breaks down its representation? They have none. The state court would have some, but that's where it would end. And if the people aren't happy with the ruling of the court, then the people then have to work together in either amending the Constitution or getting the state legislature to actually create the law. But we have to start demanding the separations of power. They've got to go all the way down to your county. I can't say this enough. I know in this circular way, I keep on rolling all of this stuff back down to the county because that's where it belongs. So let me start off with the what we call the what I call the scale of liberty. If you imagine a linear line left to right, and I don't care for the purposes of how I lay it out, on the far left is pure liberty. It is a, and actually you have a thousand, I don't care, however many dots you want to create. And I don't know how many different shades of gray there are. But you have black on one extreme of this linear line, and you have white on the other. So black and white, right? You're going from one extreme to the other extreme. All light, full light, and then you have void of light. And so in my day, when I was learning about imagery, spatial, engineering, all that type of stuff, we understood that there was basically 256 shades of gray, that the eye could discern around 16 of them. And so you could have every 256th shade going from white to black. Or you could have the 16, and if you look at my scale of liberty, it's probably closer to the 16. But nevertheless, when we move from white to black, we are surrendering some form of liberty. Now, most people think that left and right is a circular thing, that it can come back all the way around. No, it can't. When it comes to the scale of liberty, you are either surrendering liberty or you're taking it back. But the far extreme does not lead you back to the far extreme again, as they do not connect. It is not circular. Nor can it be circular. You can't go from black to white just like that. You have to go step by step by step by step by step and incrementally. I mean, you can go through there really quick. And the way to do that is by, war, seizing power, subjugating people, enslaving them, because that's the difference. On the side of liberty is where true liberty, pure liberty exists. No one in that space could imagine or would even think to imagine that you could be forced to do whatever we want you to do. That space, a person must learn for themselves and make their own decisions what is best for them, and that they too would stay and remain and abide in that space. As they look at all the facts with all of the information, they will come to the exact same conclusions, that this is good, that is evil. And slowly but surely, people start creating, well, we got to create a law for this. We got to create a law for that, that controls people. That, can we actually, because you actually hear me say this, because there is a need for having laws. In heaven, when, we don't have access to, evil things and what have you, you're kind of protected from, the evil influence. Okay, because now we're in an abiding in heaven, but we don't abide in heaven. We abide in a transitional state between heaven and hell. Let's just say that. And this earthly state that we live in, we have both good and evil. And therefore, if we're going to start creating laws, it sometimes is in this world necessary to create laws that can protect our society from true harm. What are some of those laws that we would create? They would be decency laws, not allowing a child to be exposed to erotic material. We can create, those types of laws that limit access to certain information at certain ages, or actually even banishing known destructive paradigms that are counterintuitive or antithetical to, you know, the goodness, or I should say, the betterment, or what is the best word for it? It, because it is destructive to society, because it is antithetical to society, to a good society, it needs to be removed. Like cancer, we have to remove that from the body. If we have a body that is susceptible to those types of diseases and those types of infirmities, then that's what we have to do. And so enlightenment is the discipline, applying the appropriate discipline in making sure that we're protecting ourselves a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And all the time constraining government from being able to assume and take away our inalienable rights. So you have to have this real good balance, and our Constitution gave us that. Our Constitution literally gave us that. The problem was the states. The problem was the counties. Counties and states. We, the people, didn't have the profound knowledge that the framers had. We could have. I'll bet you anything that at the during any state constitution, had they actually set aside the time to pray, and actually they all, before they even went into the convention, they all were heavily vested in learning and understanding the same principles by Locke, Bacon, Montesquieu, all of these men, Cicero, every single one of these guys, these philosophers, the content, having everybody equally informed and going into a state constitutional convention with fasting and prayer, there's no doubt in my mind they would have came up with a model that would have been very close to the United States Constitution at in your state. The same thing would happen at your county. The problem is the devil's in the details. And what I mean by that is that as we started moving and, you know, going down this path, we started dividing ourselves. We started identifying, well, you know, these new states coming into the Union were actually being heavily divided. And when you look at how Indiana and how the settlers were moving west, they were moving in blocks, you know, whether they were Quakers, whether, you know, regardless of what their religious affiliation was, whether they were Catholics, they would be moving in blocks out. And when it came time to set up that state, they didn't have unity. They didn't have religious unity. They didn't have a lot of the common unity, nor did they have the fundamental unity that the framers had in understanding the laws of nature and nature's God. So they didn't think, nor did they, you know, understand the importance of prayer and understanding these fundamental principles that really brought the framers together. Because, see, the framers were really solving a problem, and they got their arms around the problem, finally, in the Constitutional Convention. That could have easily been duplicated in state constitutional conventions and equally done at the county level. The problem is that they never, like I said, nobody ever thought that the county would be marginalized. Nobody ever thought that the power of government, the establishment of all the powers, would be done at the central levels of the federal government and then the states, where they would basically be marginalizing and destroying the governments instituted by men in this republic. So this is why we have to get back to doing just that. And so understanding this linear step by step by step of moving towards black, it only takes a little bit. Now, when you finally start understanding collectivism and the power of collectivism, which is communism, when you start understanding that, then you can actually start seeing that, you know, hey, this is good. This is a good thing. Power in the people. That is where it gets corrupted, because how do you govern yourselves in a democracy? Well, so we're still talking about the scale of liberty. We'll be right back on how do you govern yourself in that scale of liberty. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
So when you start going down the path of collectivism, this is where you literally embrace democracy, which means that everybody's voice is equal, that we don't, you know, and it's based on the desire and the drive of the mob. It's mob rule. And so what ends up happening is this is where government in a democracy becomes the epitome of tyrannical, the epitome of totalitarianism. Because what ends up happening is they empower one person to lead them, and then they make the mistake of giving that person all power. And so this is, the framers saw this. They saw that how democracies always teetered back and forth from anarchy to despotism, anarchy to despotism. Now, it wasn't binary. It was teetering. So it would slowly go up in anarchy, and, you know, then all of a sudden anarchy would start to go down and despotism would start to rise. As people started getting organized, they finally get some, I mean, it literally is a ebb and flow. It is not binary. Boom, you're full anarchy, and then you're everybody in a flash, all of a sudden, now they have despotism. It doesn't. So they understood the teetering, the slow process of this. So when we're looking at the scale of liberty, and the reason why this is important is you have to be firmly standing on this concept that everybody must choose for themselves what they're going to do. And the only way to create that kind of environment in this earthly world is by creating a republican form of government. This is why the framers and why John Adams wrote his article on it must be a republican form of government. The logical conclusion was that it was to be republican. And so this is how we establish the laws. And so the framers, really, they took the Articles of Confederation and they basically pounded those things in. And what they did was they gave government the essential things it needed to be able to function in providing the services, the few services that they were going to be able to give. That was it. The states should have been equally designed, but before the states should have gotten redesigned, the counties should have been redesigned with constitutions and basically creating this concept that all powers not delegated to the state government are reserved to the counties. I've said this before, but this is imperative. Even though nobody wanted to pay for that size of government at the county level years and years ago, boy, we're ruined the day to day, aren't we, that we haven't done this. Now, we can do this. We have to do this. We actually have to get each county to start doing this. And as you start doing this, as we start learning, but that's the critical part of how do we learn? We learn through the First Amendment petitions. And this is how people start understanding how you know, government, how the Constitution was formed and how our federal government is violating it. As we realize and come to this realization or this full understanding of the magnitude of violations of the federal government and what we need to do to fix this, this helps everybody at the county level as they're going through all of these First Amendment petitions. They all understand it with clarity what they have to do. Now, in communism and or anarchy or democracy, see, I look at the sovereign citizen as truly a democratic movement, very evil movement. Same thing with the jural assemblies. These are movements of democracies based upon these old principles of British law. Well, you know what? We're no longer under monarchical rule, and the problem that they're creating is they're creating this almost like a utopian society that just doesn't exist and can't exist in this republic. And anybody that looks at these things, anybody that actually starts understanding what a republican form of government is, would realize that these entities are antithetical. So why is it that they're popping up, and why is it that they're popular? It's easy. Because it is of Satan. It makes people feel better. It empowers them, and it helps them, you know, gain some level of understanding that they have these controls. And that's very empowering. Now, communism and what they're doing is basically kind of similar, but, you know, they recognize property rights and so forth. But communism is the next step. It is literally what they're doing is they're starting to walk down the stroll of totalitarianism, of communism, reaching the black side of the scale of liberty. So this letter, and this is kind of like to help you understand the paradigm of the people that function in that black area. Or the darker they go, the blacker they go in the lack of light, the less light, the more committed they are to their cause. And this is a letter to Billy Graham, or actually this letter wasn't to Billy Graham, it was to some other Presbyterian leader in Montreat, North Carolina. And this was a letter that was sent by a student at an Eastern University who recently went to Mexico, where in the process of time and discovering true dedication in some communist workers, he became a communist. And so this is kind of like this letter of breaking off his engagement with his fiance. So this is the letter to his fiance. This is what he said. We communists have a high casualty rate. We're the ones who get shot and hanged and lynched and tarred and feathered and jailed and slandered. We live in a virtual poverty. We turn back to the party every penny we make above what is absolutely necessary to keep us alive. We communists don't have the time or the money or any movies or concerts or T-bone steaks or decent homes and new cars. We've been described as fanatics. We are fanatics. Our lives are dominated by one great overshadowing factor, the struggle for world communism. We subordinate our petty personal selves into a great movement of humanity, and if our personal lives seem hard, our egos appear to suffer through subordination to the party, then we are adequately compensated by the thought that each of us, in his small way, is contributing something new and better for mankind. Quote, there is one thing in which I am dead earnest, and that is the communist cause. It is my life, my business, my religion, my hobby, my sweetheart, my wife, my mistress, my bread and meat. I work at it all day, or I work at it in the daytime and dream of it at night. It holds me, its hold on me grows, not lessens, as time goes on. Therefore, I cannot carry on a friendship, a love affair, or even a conversation without relating to this force which drives, which both drives and guides my life. I evaluate people, books, ideas, and actions according to how they affect the communist cause and by their attitude toward it. I've already been in jail because of my ideas, and if necessary, I am ready to go before a firing squad. Folks, now, I'm just helping you understand that this is what's happening to our kids in our school system. They're learning about this, and they're learning to become communists in dedicating their lives for their cause of compelling everybody to do what they believe needs to be done. They're teaching these children, they're weaponizing them to literally be munitions in destroying liberty, to get children to vote against the Constitution, to vote on government forms, government changes, government reform, to actually move us into what they believe is the utopian society. And I'm going to tell you something. It's going to seem like it. As a matter of fact, it's not just the kids that are actually going to be driven down this path. More and more people, because we've all been slowly inculcated, more and more people are actually going to start drinking this stuff. I think that if there's any culture in the world that has the resilience and the forbearance in being able to overcome the temptation of this nectar of communism, it will be America or the Americans themselves. We're already seeing a huge divide between the city folk and the country folk, the city states and the country states. Why? Because we have become so illiterate, and it's not about conservatism, and it's not about progressivism. It is about the rule of law. It is about the limited and defined governments. It is about the contract. It is about the Constitution. When we start framing that you can't do that, and sorry, if everybody started realizing that none of this stuff could be done without amendments, then most people would say, okay, well, let's go down that process. Let's go down that path. Then they will start realizing and learning that to get to a 3/4 majority is tougher than getting to a 50% majority of enforcing or trying to force us through elections. With that same principle, now let me bring in here Republic Review. With that same principle, with over 50% of the states, we can actually force these other states. We could actually force the federal government by purging it. So what do I mean by that? Can Republic Review actually get rid of bad senators and so forth? Yep. As a matter of fact, when you actually take control and you actually now have a majority of the states controlling in both the House and in the Senate with these majorities, you can actually start removing people by initiating what we'll call Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, inquisitions or inquiries, investigations, and actually start removing people from the Senate and from the House and send them back to their states. Because your duty and your job is to support that Constitution. It's not to support some agenda. So, folks, when you really start realizing, once you have that level of control by these states, in other words, the commitment by these states, does that mean that every other congressperson? Let's look at it this way. If we look at the 10 most, and I actually have a legislative control diagram, And I believe I've got access to that really quickly here. And so let me see if I can find it, because what I want to do is I want to give you what the last, and I haven't done this in a little while. And so it would probably help if I had it. Legislative control, state legislative control 2020. So I do have it. So here are the states, and actually it goes to Virginia based on 2020. Wyoming, South Dakota, Idaho, Utah, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, Indiana, Missouri, Kansas, Ohio, North Dakota, Nebraska, Kentucky, Wisconsin. This is in order, right? And so I think South Dakota in 2022 kind of took over with Wyoming's top spot. But anyway, going on, it's Wisconsin, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alaska, Florida, Georgia, West Virginia, Montana, Iowa, Texas, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, and Virginia. Now, the next few states, if you look at these, how many representatives from Minnesota are Republicans? And when you look at the congressional map of, you know, which are Republicans and which are Democrats, they're not all Democratic out of Minnesota. Washington has some Republican representatives as well. New Hampshire also has Republican representatives. Believe it or not, so does Colorado. Believe it or not, California has quite a few, just not enough. What I'm telling you is if we actually take 100% of these states, in other words, these states are demanding full compliance, Virginia, Arizona, Michigan, they will get rid of any Democratic and any rhinos that are in Congress, and they will force them to actually support the Constitution. Because if not, they will remove them. Because when we actually start sending directives, these directives go to Congress to tell Congress, you will shut down the Department of Transportation. You will shut down the Department of Education. You will shut down. And each directive goes after, I don't want to call it a single, but it is a comprehensive directive that goes after role, responsibility, power, what have you. So the Environmental Protection Agency, that power does not exist. So everything that is associated with the EPA is to be dismantled and decommissioned and scuttled and be done with. So as we start looking at what it takes to actually force compliance to the Constitution, it's not that much. It's not that hard. We just need to get these states, these original states. We only need to get one state to start. Once we get to 50% control or greater than 50% control, not even a two-thirds, we don't need two-thirds of Congress. All we need is a majority to actually start doing their job. Now, when we have these states that actually can control that, we can seize full control. We can replace every Democrat. And I'm going to tell you, these red states that I just named, they will be pure red states. Because there won't be anybody in the state legislature anymore that is not willing to support the Constitution. I don't care if you're Democrat or not. Either you're Democrat, you will support the Constitution. I don't care what that label is. We need to completely dismantle the power of the label and make the label actually insignificant, because it's about the Constitution, not the label. This is why I get infuriated when I see people say, we want conservative Republicans. No, we want constitutional Republicans. There's a huge difference between the two. So as we start going down this path of breaking down, you know, this scale of liberty, as we start breaking down these paradigms and we start putting it into context, you can start seeing how we can actually pull back. How do we do this, though? It's by the law. It's by the rule of law. You have some really evil people way down on that dark side that deliberately violate the law. I believe, folks, that there is a majority of the people that when they understand the law, they will actually start conforming. This has actually been proven with that, with the digital currency bill, or not bill, the digital currency petition that attacked everybody who signed or voted for that bill. Boy, we really changed. We got people's heads turned, and it absolutely changed the outcome. When you tell somebody that you're going to act, you're going to be basically creating an act of commission. In other words, you're committing an act that will be a direct violation of the Constitution, not indirect, but a direct violation. And because of that, we will have you good to rights and we'll be able to remove you from office. Here's the problem. We may have gotten enough to actually not vote for it, to pass it at all. But the problem is we still had enough people that voted for it that should and have no business being in office. And there is, I think, your focus. This is how we start focusing in these elections. This next 2024 election, we need to have these petitions and holding all of these people accountable so that we can actually get the people to replace them. Because I'm going to tell you, in South Dakota, most of those people who voted for this, these bad bills and everything else would never have wanted them to do that. They had no idea in South Dakota how close they came to crossing that line. And if you educate the voters on the Constitution and so forth, this is how powerful this movement becomes. Because people would rather have the law that protects them than the tyranny of the of an individual who can choose by their own discretion, not by the law, but by their discretion of what they want to do and how they choose to govern you. And I'm going to tell you that most Americans are going to want the rule of law to be followed, not the personality, you know, contest of what person I like to rule me and let them just have these powers to rule me how they see fit, giving them that type of discretion. So, wrapping this all up, I think you can start seeing how this paradigm, this evil paradigm, this is why I say, when you look at this commitment, this letter from this communist to this fiance to say, hey, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with you. Well, okay, a good blow in the crotch, right? It's a good kick in the crotch, right? Or a hard hit in the stomach. Regardless of where your big pain is, that is a pain that hurts when your loved one actually comes back and says, I have changed, I have no interest in you whatsoever. Ideologically, this is the indictment. This is an ideological indictment of how a person literally gets rewired to where they no longer have this, you know, what I would call the fundamental characteristics of a human being, the need of love and so forth. When somebody actually shifts that over to this state of communism, to this state of, you know, this is my love, this is my life, that's rewiring, folks. Now, whether this guy was brainwashed, I doubt it. I just think that we have lots of people, there are too many people. It's not a majority. I don't want to say lots because it's a majority, but there's more than we should have that have not been raised in the proper homes, that do not have the stability in their environment to actually be able to subdue and resist this kind of assault on their mind. And when they actually go down into this dark place, they truly believe that the ends justify the means. In other words, they will break the law. They will do whatever's necessary. They will kill. They will do what's necessary. These folks are running ragged. It's not a majority, but they have enough of them that is scaring the crap out of the majority of us. And we have to take a stand and say, look, you're the minority. and you are doing things that you have no power to do, and we're taking our power back. We have to take our power back. But again, the danger in the paradigm is that the ends justify the means. We're better off just killing you than having to deal with. Why do you think that in totalitarian reigns, the first people that they go after are the educated? Because these are the people that can make sense. They can actually teach other people the truth. So the killing fields was a huge purging effort, and this is typically what always happens. But the killing fields was a truly surgical process of making sure that they got rid of the threat. This happened in Germany. This happened in Russia. This happened in China. This happens everywhere, even in Cuba, where totalitarian states, you know, violently revolt, they seize power, and they kill people because the ends justify the means. So we can get into, and I think I do need to get into the Communist Manifesto and go through it. I think what's really important, and the one thing I would just recommend you take the time to find the book. If you want to, you can actually find W. Cleon Skousen's 45 Goals of Communism in America, and how this is a part of the congressional record. You hear people actually cite this. Get this as the congressional record and look at what those 45 goals were. And you can actually see how in the early 60s, many of these things were not even in place, and yet today they've been accomplished. They have accomplished those, and now they're exercising goals that W. Cleon Skousen didn't even think about. Seriously, that's because W. Cleon Skousen couldn't think that it would get worse. And what did I tell you yesterday? What do I tell you regular enough to say, look, it is going to get so bad, it is going to get so worse than it is today, to a point that I can't do it justice. Where the technology of Hollywood, the visual, the audio, all of the technology that they can portray so that you could perceive, you know, things that aren't even within our own minds. The creativity just isn't there to actually do things that is of the biblical proportion of how bad it's going to be. Folks, can you imagine the rivers of blood running through Jerusalem? The Bible tells us that that's what's going to happen. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that if the Bible tells us it's going to happen, I would lend to believe the Bible. I would lend to say, I wouldn't even question this. I would say, not on my watch. This isn't going to happen now. We got to take this back. We have every advantage. Everything is in our favor. The law is in our favor. The people are in our favor if we win them over. We just have to give them the information. And most people are reasonable. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And so we're here to actually help. We're here to actually solve problems. There's no money in this. This is why the many evangelical, or I should say preachers of the Constitution and conservative entertainers, both those camps, they have no desire to fix this problem. This problem is the goose that lays the golden egg and making them rich. We have to do this without them. We can do this. We need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.